The Guardian.
I'm Anoushka Astana. Welcome to Politics Weekly. We are at the launch of the Conservative Manifesto in Halifax, where outside a group of protesters not keen on Theresa May. Inside, the Prime Minister set out a vision of a Britain with more state intervention than Tory predecessors.
It means making Britain a country where everyone, of whatever background, has the chance to go as far as their talent and their hard work will take them.
But she rejected the idea that this was an ideology that was all hers.
There is no Mayism. I know you journalists like to write about it. There is good, solid conservatism.
Tory maybe, but this is about a land grab of Labour territory.
We'll be joined by the FT's political editor, George Parker, The Guardian's deputy political editor, Rowena Mason, and the man we're hoping will come forward with the jokes, our sketch writer, John Crace.
But first, let's stay in West Yorkshire, but rewind and see what Labour were up to 2 days ago in nearby Bradford.
Our proposal is a government for the many, not the few. Our proposals are of hope for the many all over this country. And I'm very proud to present our manifesto for the many, not the few. Thank you very much.
That's Jeremy Corbyn addressing a jubilant crowd of supporters and some journalists, although we didn't feel overly welcome.
No, please, nice. Please, let's have respect for everyone who wants to ask a question.
Jeremy Corbyn asked the room to stop, but some of his fans told us his depiction in the media was unfair.
Absolutely not fair. It's just biased. Typically BBC reporting. And he's not given a fair crack of the whip. He's demonised all the time in the press and the media.
What do you love about him? Tell me what you love about Jeremy.
He seems to connect with people on a real level. You get the feeling that he's passionate about just making things better for everybody. And I know that's, it's for the many, but that's, it's there for the NHS, it's there for schools, it's there for people in the future.
So let's discuss that Labour launch with our panel, George Parker, John Crace and Rowena Mason. George, does Corbyn get a fair ride in the media?
Well, of course he doesn't. The media is we have a free press in this country. The mainstream media are no great fans of Jeremy Corbyn and the kind of socialism he's espousing. So, but politicians complaining about the free press, as someone once said, is a bit like sailors complaining about the sea. It's a fairly futile exercise. You have to find a way of working through Britain's press to get your message across. And I don't think Jeremy Corbyn helps himself by not really engaging with the media. And we've made multiple requests, for example, at the Financial Times to interview Jeremy Corbyn. And strangely enough, he's always declined the opportunity to put his case across to our readers.
John, there is a certain bias, as George is talking about. I mean, for example, the Daily Mail on social care was rather pleased with Theresa May. I suspect if it had been Jeremy Corbyn, the Daily Mail might have been suggesting they were going to come out and steal our homes from us.
But yeah, he would be the most hated man in Britain. And, I mean, George is absolutely right. A lot of the press do give him a hard time. And as a sketch writer, I tend to think of myself as equal opportunities to have fun at both parties' expense. But I personally get quite a lot of grief from people on the left saying that I have a duty to be extra nice to Jeremy Corbyn, as if he's this kind of special case that needs extra hearing and special indulgence.
And Rowena, let's talk about the manifesto. I mean, well, it was quite radical, wasn't it?
It was extremely radical. There were lots of big promises, such as the pledge to scrap tuition fees, a return to nationalisation of things like the energy sector, the water industry, Royal Mail and the railways. And the whole thing was... It came with a fully costed document, so every single pound that Labour was pledging to spend came with a promise to raise that money in extra taxes.
And do you believe it? Do you think that they can raise that money in those extra taxes?
Well, the document's going to be pored over, and there has been some scepticism from the Independent Institute for Fiscal Studies, but at least Labour has made an attempt to try and balance what it's spending. with what it's raising, in contrast to the Conservative document that we saw today, that is very, very light on numbers and calculations at all.
Yeah, George, as a man of finance, you know, being the political editor of the Financial Times, will you be scrutinising the Labour manifesto and thinking, actually, it doesn't quite add up?
Well, we have been scrutinising the Labour manifesto, and I think there are some fairly heroic assumptions in there. I mean, to be fair to the Labour Party, they've set out a policy which some columnists, for example, Martin Wolf on the FT, think is broadly sensible. For example, borrowing at a time of very low interest rates to invest in the country's, frankly, inadequate infrastructure. But I think the view that the Labour Party can fund all of its current spending on things like schools and hospitals just by raising taxes on the wealthy and on corporations is frankly wishful thinking, because people change their behaviour, they move offshore, whatever it is. So in the end, I think the impression given to the public is not so much the precise numbers and whether they add up, but just a sense that the Labour Party loves spending money, loves spending other people's money, and if the sums don't add up, they might be coming to you to pay for it. And I think that's the problem, this sort of sense from the Labour manifesto that the private sector is bad, the public sector is good. And if you're going to trust the state to run large parts of the economy, you want to have faith in the people running the states. And frankly, the view of the public of Jeremy Corbyn, John McDonnell, and the way they run the Labour Party doesn't instill them with great faith in their ability to run the economy and the great commanding heights.
I think that even if the Labour Party sums did add up, no one would still buy it, because I don't think they're going to buy into Jeremy.
Well, I'll tell you who might have bought it. All those people who were watching him with stars in their eyes. There is something, isn't there? There is a certain Corbyn factor that really gets people excited.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a lot of hysteria there. I mean, as the BBC were sort of speaking, there was a little bloke with fake news putting up his sign, and it was Corbyn, Corbyn, Corbyn. And then sort of Jeremy has to say, it's not a cult of personality, when all the evidence appears to be to the contrary.
OK, well, let's move on to Tim, because the Lib Dems, as we know, launched their manifesto this week as well in an East London nightclub.
The more Liberal Democrat MPs you elect, the better deal we will get on Europe. The more Liberal Democrat MPs you elect, the more jobs, the more money for our NHS and for our schools. The more Liberal Democrat MPs you elect, the brighter the future for our children. Theresa May and Nigel Farage's cold, mean-spirited Britain is not the Britain I love. The Britain I love is generous and it is compassionate. The Britain I love is one where we are decent to each other. The Britain I love is open, tolerant and united. If that is the Britain you love too, then this is the moment to stand up.
John, you were there for the Lib Dem rave. What was it like?
It was completely mad. It was, in many ways, it was the best manifesto launch of all time, because there was absolutely no discussion of the manifesto. There was a bit of, well, a soft house and classic reggae playing in this, like, in this old warehouse in the East End. It took place in the evening at a time when the Lib Dems had been guaranteed to miss the lunchtime and early evening news bulletins. And Tim Farron came on and made a sort of great stump speech in which he didn't mention the manifesto at all. It was one of the strangest events I've ever been happy to sketch.
Well, I was very sorry to not be there, and I read your sketch with delight. It was very good fun. And Rowena, the thing that he did mention, even if he didn't mention the manifesto, was Brexit, because for the Lib Dems, this is all about Brexit. But it appears they're having a problem, because for many people, for many voters, this election isn't about Brexit.
Yes, it's very interesting. I think the Lib Dems want voters to remember one thing about their election campaign, and that's that they would want a second referendum on Brexit. And that, unfortunately for them, isn't going down as well as they thought it might among former Remain voters, with polling suggesting that actually quite a few of those people are just fed up with the debate. They want everything to move on and for the government to get on with implementing Brexit. There had in recent months been some kind of some local by-elections that suggested the Lib Dems were doing really, really well in some pockets of their former heartlands in the southwest. But actually, in the local elections on May, in early May, that sort of resurgence for them didn't materialise at all, and it feels like they're very much struggling to break through.
Okay, and George, just quickly on the Lib Dems, your paper was, of course, a Remain paper. Would you like to see Brexit overturned?
Yeah, no, the FT sort of endorsed the Liberal Democrats as part of a coalition at the 2015 election. And if the FT was going to be identified with any party, it would probably be Nick Clegg's Orange Book Liberal Democrats, internationalist, pro-European, socially tolerant, all the rest of it. But look, this is not going to be a great election for the Lib Dems for the reasons Rowena's just set out. So, at the start of this campaign, I'd have said the Lib Dems were looking to win possibly 30 or more seats. I think now, frankly, there'll be some Lib Dems who'd be glad to hold on to the 9 they currently hold, because the Remain argument seems to be sort of fading away in the country. When you go out and talk to people, there's a British stoicism aboard, which is, even if you voted Remain, there's a view, the vote's been had, get on and deliver it. It may not be what we wanted, but we can't turn back on it.
OK, thank you all. Wait here. I have spotted the election artist Cornelia Parker here today. I'm just going to run off and try to grab her. So I am delighted to be joined by the official election artist, Cornelia Parker. And I want to ask you, tell me what you're doing during the election.
Well, I'm just observing, really. I'm following everybody around, being a sort of a weird member of the press pack, and everybody's there, writing their words and asking questions, and I'm taking images. I suppose I'm gathering raw material for my final piece.
How different are the different parties? Do they inspire you differently?
Well,
you got images in your mind of Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn?
Well, it's a bit further away. I was further back down the room for this one than I was in the Labour one. I had a great seat in the Labour one. This is much more controlled. The Labour one was... There was lots of warm feeling going down, and this one's, everybody's on message. I'm trying to get images of Theresa coming out of the car, but she's like a nanosecond, there for a nanosecond, and she was off.
So back with my panel now, we've heard what Theresa May had to say. And I think my first question to you, Rowena, is, she said it's not about Mayism, it's all about being a Conservative. Do you buy it?
Well, no, not really, because the entire manifesto was really setting out an ideology, a philosophy, as well as lots of individual policies. And what she was claiming that represented was a break with the Thatcherism of the past, of slavish devotion to free markets and selfish individualism. And she wanted conservatism, she was redefining conservatism as a philosophy that was to do with community and the country. And many of her policies take a more interventionist approach than that of her predecessors. So things like the cap on energy costs, controls on critical companies when they're being faced with foreign takeovers. So there was a change of direction, and even though she didn't want to call it Mayism, it does suggest that she is moving away from the philosophies of the past.
And John, one of the highlights of this campaign has been your depictions of Kim Jong-mei, as we call her. Is that who you saw standing up there today?
Very much so. I mean, one of the joys of that particular launch was watching the sort of cabinet walk in, looking like sort of the condemned, really. They are, so it wouldn't have looked out of place in a sort of third world republic. All the men in sort of identical suits, white shirts, blue ties, with rictor smiles. And the moment she came in, they sort of first to leap up and applaud everything she said. And, I mean, I think, it was all about me, me, me. A few mentions of her team, and very little mention of conservatism at all. She is the supreme leader. I think they recognise the fact that she is going to win by a landslide, and if they want to keep their jobs, they've got to play ball.
We're talking about the cabinet, and, Theresa May wasn't exactly endorsing her Chancellor, Philip Hammond, that heavily this week. What chance do you reckon there is of him remaining in place?
It was a fairly disastrous press conference this week where Theresa May unusually shared a platform with someone else, in this case Philip Hammond. They seemed to have nothing much to say apart from slagging off the Labour Party's policies. And then they faced the inevitable question, given the reports there have been of tensions between Theresa May and Philip Hammond, will he keep his job on June the 9th? And they didn't seem to have an answer prepared for that question, which seemed odd. And first of all, Theresa May tried to duck the question, and then she gave the most lukewarm endorsement of Philip Hammond I've ever heard. Look, I mean, I think the thing is that it would worry the markets and it would worry business if Philip Hammond was to be removed, because he's seen as a break against a hard Brexit and someone who's prepared to stand up against some of the more sort of lefty, in their eyes, views of the economy that people like Nick Timothy, Theresa May's chief of staff, have been advancing. Well, you know, intervention in the economy and, you know, curbing untrammeled capitalism of the kind some people who read the FT rather like Anoushka. But, so do I think he's going to keep his job? I would say there's at least an even chance that he won't. So, I mean, I think it would be undesirable were he to be sacked. There are some people in the Treasury who think that because there have been these clashes between Philip Hammond and Nick Timothy, although I don't think between Philip Hammond and Theresa May, that relationship might have broken down a bit. But look, I mean, if Theresa May can't maintain a relationship with someone she's known for 20 years, Philip Hammond, in that job as our next-door neighbour, then it's hard to imagine anybody else who could make a better fist of that relationship. So I think my hope is that he'll keep the job.
Who might come in if not? David Davis?
Not David Davis. I think his head is too full of Brexit to be moved from that job. But I think the two people have discussed are Amber Rudd, who's got a background in the banking industry. Although the safer pair of hands, and certainly the person that Theresa May could probably get on with more than anyone else apart from Philip Hammond, is Damian Green, the working pension secretary, someone she's known since university days. He wouldn't be seen as a threat to her. He's someone who gets on very well with her. But, you know, let's keep our fingers crossed. I think it's a bit too early to make a judgment on Philip Hammond's effectiveness, notwithstanding his rapidly unravelling budget in the spring.
And just finally, Rowena, we're talking reshuffle. Is it certain that it's going to be Theresa May back in Downing Street, do you think?
Well, you can never say never, and Theresa May herself is fond of trying to make voters think that she's not going to walk back into Downing Street, saying that Jeremy Corbyn was 200-1 to be Labour leader when that first contest happened. Having said that, the polls are consistently showing double-digit lead for the Tories, and you can see from the strategies of the two parties that the Conservatives are campaigning much more in target seats, aggressively in places like the North East and Yorkshire and Lancashire, whereas Labour are getting really quite worried about defending some seats. So the bets really are on a Conservative victory at the moment. There's 3 weeks left. Anything could happen, though.
Let's see. Thank you all very much.
Join me, Jonathan Friedland.
And me, Owen Jones, as we bring you The Guardian's Election Daily podcast every lunchtime until polling day.
We'll bring you the best commentary and analysis from around Britain as we approach what could be another seismic day in British politics.
Subscribe now on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, let's join Peter Walker out in Clacton.
I'm currently walking down a very, very quiet residential street in a place called Jaywick, which is about 2 or 3 miles outside of Clacton-on-Sea on the Essex coast. And I'm on the trail, in fact, I'm literally walking quickly to catch him up now, of Paul Oakley, who's a UKIP candidate for Clacton. And obviously, as many of you will know, Clacton was the only place in the last parliament which had a UKIP MP, Douglas Carswell, who was a defector from the Tories, who had a by-election and won it for UKIP, but earlier this year gave up and is now not standing again. So Paul Oakley's got the difficult task of trying to replace Carswell, who's a very, very popular local MP. And I've been talking to quite a few people, and they say that even though this is one of the most kind of deprived areas in Essex, if not in England, there's a lot of deprivation. For them, Brexit is still a very, very real issue, and it's going to be interesting to see how UKIP will fare.
It's been pretty good, actually, from the people that have wanted to talk to us. But yeah, it's pretty positive. Nobody's saying they're going to vote Tory, nobody's saying they're going to vote Labour, and nobody's saying they're going to vote Lib Dem. So it's really just a case of getting our supporters out on the day. I think that's got to be the focus.
Does that put more pressure on you to deliver the MP seat?
Not pressure. But I think my friends and colleagues, those people who actually know me, have some trust in me that I might be able to pull it off. I know it's an uphill struggle. I mean, we know that Theresa May has cynically called this election at the time when the other parties, including UKIP, are not on their best war footing. But we're going to be fighting bloody hard in this seat, I'll tell you that for nothing.
We are the most danger to the established parties.
Joan is a UKIP activist, and she insists the party can win again in Clacton. How many MPs do you think you're going to have on June the 9th?
Absolutely no idea, but I do hope we shall have a few to help keep Theresa May's feet to the fire and make sure that she does what she has said she's going to do and does it quickly, because we've got more and more cuts being made here at home, and an area such as this will prove to anybody who looks around that we don't need these cuts in this country. We need our money spent here.
So what kind of a place is this? I caught up with Brian Stimpson, a local UKIP supporter who knows the area very, very well.
You couldn't move for crowds. It, It was that good. We had three theatres, we had all the top stars, we had a Butlins here, which is, which was now a building site, but unfortunately, well, it's an eye-opener, isn't it?
But, I mean, that's what I was going to ask you, because a lot of this is about kind of long-term economic decline over the decades, and yet this party, which is very much based around the single issue of the European Union, is very popular here. Could you explain why you think that is? Why UKIP? Why this is a UKIP stronghold here?
Clacton. Well, we had Doug, you've heard of Douglas.
Oh, yeah, of course.
He done so much for Clacton. He done a lot for local people. Oh, we had television crews here. A lot of people in Clacton are UKIP minded.
Let's whisper it because he's over there. Do you think Paul can win this time?
I don't know how to make a comment on that.
It's a tough ask, isn't it?
It is. Theresa May is so popular as a Prime Minister.
She's taken a lot of UKIP votes, isn't she?
That is it. Yeah. Yeah, she's taken a lot of UKIP votes, yeah.
If UKIP is to win here, they'll have to beat the overwhelming bookies' favourite, Giles Watling, an actor who appeared in the 80s TV series Bread. In a seat that voted heavily to leave the EU, he's an unapologetic Remainer.
As far as people around Jaywick and the West Clacton areas are concerned, I think Brexit was a big issue for many reasons. I found them on the doorstep. Worry about immigration, mass immigration. Worrying about opening up the borders to the entirety of Europe.
Are you pleased to be not fighting against a local UKIP candidate, as did seem to be the case, until suddenly it was all changed around?
Well, I'm used to fighting against the local UKIP candidate. That was Douglas Carswell, of course.
Yes, of course.
And I was used to that. I lost to him by a margin of 12,400 votes the first time. Brought him into within 3,400 votes the second time.
Are you disappointed not to have a third crack at him?
In a sense. This is one of the things about politics at the moment that I find rather distasteful, is how it's all turned nasty and personal. Let's talk about the issues that concern people on the streets. But, you know, I'm not going to attack Paul Oakley on a personal level in any way. You know, he's as far as I know, he's a regular guy who's come down here to fight his corner.
That was Peter Walker. Well, that is all we have time for this week. The election will keep hotting up, so please join us again. I'm Anushka Astana. This is Politics Weekly. The producers were Phil Maynard and Alex Healy.